stories, teachings, and guidance. Welcome to the Women's Moon Wisdom Podcast with your host, Rebecca Rankin.
Welcome back to the Women's Moon Wisdom Podcast. I have been looking forward to this episode for a while now. In today's episode, I'm so excited to introduce you all to our guest, Kate Schumacher of Peaceable Pelvis, who is a pelvic health specialist, an occupational therapist, a mom, an entrepreneur, and fellow Michigander like myself here in Northern Michigan. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here too.
So, Kate, you specialize in helping women basically not feel like their bodies are failing them. And you really help women in all stages of life, from recovery from childbirth, managing pelvic pain and discomfort, helping having leaks down there. And you're clearly so passionate about this work. One of my favorite questions to ask my guests is, how did you get here? Like where, how did you get where you are in your career? Like what brought you into this as your life's work? Tell us about your journey.
Sure. So as a student in occupational therapy school, you have to do clinical rotations supervised. And one of the occupational therapists that I was following was working in the same facility as a woman who was also an occupational therapist, but she was working in pelvic health, which I didn't know to be an option for me at that time. So, you know, I asked my supervisor if I could spend some time with her, this other therapist, for a day. And during that day, I saw her working with women, primarily middle-aged women who were dealing with urinary incontinence. And they were coming in and telling her these amazing stories of how their problems were being resolved. And just to see how much their quality of life was improving because of that, it was really eye-opening for me that I could have that type of effect on somebody's life. So I always knew from that point on that this was an area that I hoped to grow in my practice. So I spent a lot of time exploring this niche specialty for therapists, but I didn't really see how I would turn that into a career. There weren't a lot of occupational therapists doing it. That person that I had followed that day ended up moving to Florida shortly after. So she kind of left this hole. This mentor that I was like hoping to have just disappeared, sadly. So I continued to grow in my education to pursue the continuing education that I would need, because you don't come out of, whether you're a physical therapist or an occupational therapist, you don't graduate with the ability to just start in this specialty area. You have to pursue the continuing education. So I started doing that while working, because obviously there were student loans to pay. I had to get out there and start being a therapist. And it got to the point where I realized that what I was doing was not fulfilling my desires as a therapist. So I had this little, whatever you'd call it, in the back of my head, just kind of giving me that nudge, like it's time to do it. It's time to do it. And then COVID happened. And why not start a business during COVID? So I started seeing some, after we kind of got through those first few months of like, am I allowed to leave the house? Am I supposed to be cleaning my groceries? You know, we made it through that scary period, and I started seeing some clients just on the side during my lunch break and like after work. And then I had my son. I only have one son at this point, one child, and going through that pregnancy and realizing what gaps existed in our current medical system, especially when it comes to pregnancy and postpartum, just really lit that fire in me that this is a need that needs to be fulfilled. Someone needs to be working with these women, filling those gaps, providing the care that should be but isn't the standard of practice in our society. So at that point, I decided to do this full time and make the leap. hard to leave a paycheck and, you know, knowing what to expect and being at a 8 to 5 Monday through Friday job, but it's the best decision I've ever made. And I feel so fulfilled, and it's incredible what, you know, today I had a client tell me that she was able to run a 5K without leaking for the first time since she had her son. So that was a huge win. And just to hear little things like that to make such a difference in people's lives has been extremely rewarding. And I'm so passionate about it.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Clearly you're doing like your life's work, like your life's purpose. Like this is because it like lights you up, and you have these testimonials of improving, you know, women's lives from something that was like life disrupting to something that's like life empowering. Oh, yes.
Absolutely. It's been so amazing.
So the pelvic floor, can you like give us, I know this is just on podcast, but can you just briefly help us understand like the physiology of the pelvic floor? I feel like a lot of women are like, yes, I have one of those and I'm supposed to do Kegels and that's about it.
Well, if anyone already knows that they have one, they're actually like a step ahead a lot of people. But so I guess if you're listening, and I can't provide visuals obviously on a podcast, but if you're sitting down and you can like reach under your bottom and feel your sits bones, and then you can, you know, find your tailbone and then your pubic bone in the front. So those are our four attachment points for our pelvic floor. And the pelvic floor then forms like a hammock, really, more so than a floor, kind of connecting those four points. And through our pelvic floor, we have, you know, our anal sphincter, the urethra, and then the vaginal introitus, our vaginal opening. But other than those three entry and exit points, you have this like beautiful muscle belly that is providing support to your pelvis from within. It also has to hold all of the organs that are inside of our pelvis up. So it has to be tight enough to do that, but it also has to be able to relax enough to allow us to urinate, to have bowel movements comfortably, to have sexual penetration in a comfortable way, and then to participate in childbirth if that's the route someone chooses to go. So it's an incredible muscle because it has to operate in both of these capacities of relaxation and of a contraction or a tightening, and then somewhere in between to just be in this like resting state. So it's a pretty fascinating muscle group, and it's involved with so many other structures because it forms the bottom of your core system, but then also it's providing support to your pelvis. So it also relates to like the strength of your glutes, your hamstrings, your inner thighs. So even though it's a really tiny muscle group, it has a really big job to play, and it's involved with a lot of other systems that are going on as well.
Yeah, amazing. I love my body. So with that, you kind of like briefly touched on this because the pelvic floor has so many roles. I feel like for a lot of us, like women, we automatically think if there's any sort of like dysfunction in our pelvic floor, we're like, well, it's weak. It's weak. We have a weak pelvic floor. Yet, like, that's not always the case, right? Can you like a little bit, I know you could probably do a whole podcast episode about like the difference between a weak pelvic floor and a tight one. But maybe just briefly for our listeners, just what is the difference? How do we even know if we're dealing with one or the other as far as like disruption or dysregulation?
Sure. That is very common that someone comes to me and they're like, you know, I know I have a weak pelvic floor and I know I need to be doing more Kegels. When in reality, for most of us, it's not that your pelvic floor is weak. it's typically that the range of motion is limited. So our pelvic floor, this muscle group, has to have full range of motion, just like any other muscle in our body, to function at its best. If you have a weak pelvic floor, you don't have the full range of motion to operate in a full contraction. But if you have a tight pelvic floor, you could be stuck somewhere where you don't have good contraction, but you don't have a good extension or release either. So I know you can't see because it's a podcast, but I'm holding my arm because I like to think about it like your bicep muscle. You have to totally relax your bicep muscle to extend your arm. You have to contract your bicep to flex it. So you need both of those things. If your pelvic floor is too tight, you may be somewhere in between and you can't get that full range of motion that you need to operate completely optimally for the pelvic floor's function. I have to say that a majority of my clients come to me with a pelvic floor that is actually too tight.
Really?
Okay. And tightness is not a good thing. It is weakness. It's just a different type of weakness. And those are people that are often leaking when they like sneeze or laugh or cough, because the pelvic floor doesn't have the capacity to relax to accommodate the extra force from those actions. Those are people that might have a hard time having a bowel movement without straining, or sexual activity might be difficult or uncomfortable. So with all of my clients, regardless of whether their pelvic floor is tight or weak, which are basically the same things, really. The first thing we focus on is learning how to relax those muscles and lengthen them, because you have to have a muscle that can lengthen before you can strengthen it. So if your pelvic floor is tight and you start doing Kegels, you're just going to make it tighter and you're going to possibly make your issues worse. So to first gain flexibility in that muscle before you strengthen it is the most important thing to do.
And what would be a particular exercise that someone could do on their own at home to, like, if they're dealing with like a tight pelvic floor? I assume, as a yoga teacher, I assume it's going to involve breath work.
Yes. So that's the amazing relationship of the pelvic floor with our diaphragm muscle, is how we often teach clients to access those muscles. The diaphragm muscle, you know, at the base of our rib cage, mirrors our pelvic floor and vice versa. So when you take a nice deep breath and you inhale in an effective way with rib cage expansion, not a chest breath, but if you can take a nice diaphragmatic breath, you should feel the pelvic floor muscles also relaxing and extending. So the diaphragm and pelvic floor work together. So then when you exhale, your pelvic floor should lift. So often my first introduction to creating that mindfulness with the pelvic floor is to have my clients even just to sit on their hand and to try to feel that happening as they take an inhale, to feel the pelvic floor muscles kind of relaxing into their hand. And then on the exhale, gently lifting away. And then to practice that same breath and hip opening postures like child's pose, happy baby pose, pigeon pose. I love trying to, sorry, that's my dogs. I love trying to introduce that same breath into different postures so that they can learn how to carry over that into their day-to-day, even if it's like a sumo, a deep squat, hip opening with pelvic floor breath is a good way to start to learn how to lengthen those muscles.
I love that. That's, and I love that idea of like weaving it into something like you're already doing, like in your yoga practice or in your exercises, because that's like the one thing that I feel like a lot of us who we got things to do. We got lives to do. And it's like, oh, one more thing. I need to now spend 2 minutes you know, before I go to bed, between meditating and doing breath work and doing my yoga practice, to like, now I need to relax my pelvic floor. It's great that you can do it all in one.
That's my goal, is to, well, I primarily see my clients in their homes. I do have office space, but I'm most often in my clients' homes. And I like to see like what they're already doing. Are you trying to balance, you know, 5 kids at home with a job, working remotely? Like, how can we work this into what you're already doing? Even if it means that I'm helping them set a timer for 4 times a day, just to remember to take a deep breath, just to remember to get ribcage expansion, because they're probably in like this stressy sort of fight or flight mode all the time, and just chest breathing. Well, if you're just chest breathing all the time and your diaphragm's never expanding, your pelvic floor never will either. So to try to fit a new routine into an already chaotic existence might be tricky, but how can I come to you and make this work into what you're already doing? How can I teach you to use your pelvic floor muscles when you're lifting, if you're someone who likes to lift weights? How can we talk about what your pelvic floor is doing if you're a runner? So it's a tiny muscle group, so it shouldn't need a ton of attention. We just need to have a mindfulness of it and understand how it should be serving us, not how it should be controlling us.
Right. Yeah. And I assume, just like with anything, the more like when you bring mindfulness and awareness to it at first, like you will have to like keep checking in, but this is not for the rest of your life. You're going to have to set, you know, like eventually you will just naturally do this, is my assumption.
That's my hope too. I want to bring the tools to my clients so that they can start creating habits that just carry over into the rest of their lives. Something as simple as exhaling when you're lifting can make a difference for your pelvic floor muscles, because if you're inhaling or bearing down while you're lifting something heavy, that's pressure downward on your pelvic floor muscles. So even just changing that habit, I often tell clients, if the only thing you remember after I come is that you should be exhaling when you lift your toddler off the floor, then that's a success. Like, that's less bearing down and straining on your pelvic floor muscles. So that'll be great. But yeah, it should become eventually, once you practice it again and again, just something you do. It's just a habit.
So let's say we're doing the, you know, techniques, the breathing patterns, the diaphragmatic breathing. Like, are Kegels bad? Like, should we like not be doing them? Like, I feel like I've read everything about the benefits of Kegels, and then the like terrible that Kegels should be like avoided. Tell me your thoughts.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of Kegels, only for the reason that they focus on tightening. When someone thinks of a Kegel, they think about tightening those muscles and almost never focus on the relaxation part. So if you can do a Kegel effectively, if you can go through the full range of motion, then come back down, sure, that can be helpful if you need to strengthen. But you know, it's a tiny muscle group, so you can definitely overdo it. I don't go to the gym to hit my forearms. I don't go like just exercise my forearm muscles. So I think the better approach to strengthening your pelvic floor, if that's what's needed, is to strengthen the accessory muscles surrounding the pelvic floor, so that you can give the pelvic floor muscles the break that they need from doing all the other work of stabilizing the pelvis, because your glutes aren't doing it, because your core is not doing it, whatever it may be. Let's strengthen those bigger muscles so that the pelvic floor can just chill and do the job that it's supposed to do. Because typically that's what we're seeing is necessary, rather than just like going at this tiny muscle group that's just been doing more than its lion's share for too long.
Mm-hmm.
Which is often the case.
Love it. Yes. So one thing that I have like always thought was so interesting, is this kind of normalization of incontinence, or like the normalization of like having a leaky bladder when you sneeze or when you cough. And yeah, like I've always thought, like, I don't think this is how our bodies were initially designed to work. Why do you think there is like such a prevalent issue, like in our modern age, of just like bladder incontinence?
Why do I think it exists, or why do you think it's been normalized?
Either one.
Okay.
Whatever you want to talk about.
That's tricky because it has definitely been normalized. I will screen clients before I see them and I'll ask them if they have leakage, and they will say no. But then when I'm with them face to face, I say, well, do you leak when you sneeze or cough? Oh, well, yeah. Like, well, that's leakage. That's still abnormal, but it's completely been normalized. I think because there's been a stigma surrounding it for so long that I know certainly my grandmother, who had 5 children, had lots of pelvic floor dysfunction, but never talked about it. So then I'm sure when her children had babies and maybe would have complained about some symptoms they were experiencing, she would have said, oh yeah, that's fine. That happens to a lot of us. And I think that this normalization has just been perpetuated for years because of the fear of talking about it out in the open.
Yeah.
Because it is so common, but that doesn't mean that it's normal. You know, I haven't read any studies or seen research on this, but I would also imagine that the lifestyle that most of us are living now, which is very different from the lifestyles of our ancestors, of more time sedentary, has had an impact on our pelvic floors, more time sitting. I think that we deal with a lot more stress now, just in the form of more exposure to screens, not living this very simple lifestyle that was common for our ancestors, has also led to more pelvic floor dysfunction because that muscle group is very stress responsive. Mm. It is extremely likely to tighten up when you're in like a fight or flight response. So that also leads to pelvic floor dysfunction. So that would be an interesting study, but I'm not sure how you could conduct it,
right?
Because you'd have to go back in time. But yeah, I do think that a lot of the dysfunction that I see in my clients is often as a result of the stress that they carry and how much that we manifest stress in our bodies as a result of just trying to do it all and trying to keep it together on the outside, when we might be losing it on the inside. So we kind of stuff it down. And what's down at the very bottom of that system we're stuffing? It's our pelvic floor, trying to hold it all together.
Oh my gosh. It's so true. You know, the stigma of talking about any sort of dysfunction of, like, you know, in of pelvic health, womb health, of reproductive health, you know, you can track it back, you know, your grandmothers, your great grandmothers, the great, you know, that it was not discussed. You didn't talk about it. Even looking at the history of women's health, I was reading a book recently, just tracking the history of women's health, and you're like, wow, it was
with even with birth and birth having become so medical.
Yes.
It all takes place in the hospital behind closed doors. There are medications that are made to numb the pain, or there are medications that you are made to believe are necessary. Where it used to be that you birthed at home or in your village, surrounded by community. So just that's where we kind of start the conversation, is that we need to normalize birth and what can happen as a result of birth to our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And not make it seem something that's very medical or to be afraid of or to be stuck behind closed doors. And I think that's a good place to start the conversation because it's something we can all wrap our heads around.
Yeah.
We were all born.
Yeah. Got all that. We have that in common with everyone.
Yes.
And it's true. I think there, you know, there's a lot of birthing wisdom that's been lost, you know, as it's gone into the more medical practices. And I'm going to kind of shift gears a little bit. We can understand that like pelvic floor and how it's associated a little bit with incontinence, with leakage. And you pointed in this direction a little bit, but what about like, how does the pelvic floor affect like back pain, SI joint pain, hip pain, especially for those who maybe haven't given birth, or even those who have, right? Really, I feel like any woman, or really probably any person with a pelvis, a pelvic floor, this could be applicable to. How is that related?
Sure. Hugely related. Our pelvic floor muscles, firstly, attach at our tailbone. So if we have any dysfunction in our pelvic floor muscles that pull at our tailbone or vice versa, that's going to impact structures along the spine. Anything that takes place at one point in the spine is going to have an effect on the rest of the spine. That's one way. There are also a lot of ligaments in our pelvis that attach at the sacrum. So those ligaments can also be a source of pain too. So what came first, the chicken or the egg? Often we don't know, often we never do. So you have to kind of figure out which approach to take, but working on the pelvic floor muscles can improve the integrity of the spine and muscles along the spine and vice versa. Also, you know, your sacroiliac joint where the sacrum meets the pelvis is, you know, it is a joint. So there is some movement there where you think that your pelvis is just this solid structure, but there is a joint in the back and the joint in the front at your pubic symphysis. So movement does happen there, and excess friction can occur if the muscles surrounding those joints aren't strong enough to provide the stability that they need. So that's another way in which we can try to improve the integrity of your pelvic health is by strengthening the structures that stabilize the pelvis.
I have like SI joint issues, and I'm like, and I know so many women who do. And I'm like, why is that?
And also it can be, you know, during pregnancy, your pelvis goes into that anterior tilt to accommodate the growing belly. And then after you have the baby, the pelvis wants to come back into a neutral position. Oftentimes that leads to instability. Maybe your structures on the posterior side of your body aren't strong enough to facilitate that shift. And then they are strained as a result. So there can be a lot of reasons for it, but it is really common. Or is it a result of having a baby and then carrying around this child for so many years, right? Yeah. So that low back SI pain can arise from a few different potential reasons.
So as a pelvic health specialist, what does that look like? What do you do? Like, and who might be someone that would want to seek out your expertise?
Sure. So my treatments look different with every client. It's heavily education focused. I want to provide as much information to my clients as I can because cliche, but knowledge is power. And having mindfulness of your own body, knowing how to connect with those body parts, I believe is so important because I want my clients to be detectives of their own bodies, to be able to understand why this is happening, what am I feeling and why. So a lot of education, especially in those first few visits. I do some manual work, sometimes internally, sometimes externally, depending on the needs of my client and their comfort level. Exercises to provide the strength and stability that they need. And sometimes if we're in the home, we'll go over their alignment and how they're engaging in just like daily tasks. Like, what are you doing throughout your day that could be making this worse? And how can we improve your approach so that you are stronger, you are offering stability to your pelvic floor, you're not doing something that could be creating more dysfunction. So the clients that I'm seeing, certainly clients who are pregnant are going to benefit from pelvic floor therapy in a preventative way. Or if they're having some issues during pregnancy, which are often common, like that low back pain, that pubic symphysis pain. But let's get you ready for birth and be proactive about it. I believe that everyone who's had a baby deserves to see a pelvic floor therapist in that fourth trimester period, we call it, just to make sure that they're healing properly and that they're recovering in the right way and that they're not going to start creating some bad habits that will affect them for the rest of their lifetime. Other than that pregnancy and postpartum category, the clients that I like to see are clients who are dealing with urinary leakage. And that can be full-blown incontinence, but also it's when you cough and sneeze and leak. I like seeing clients who are having a hard time having bowel movements or possibly having bowel leakage as well. That is another problem that I've seen. And then clients who are having pain during sex. That is not normal. It should not be normalized. Sex is supposed to be pleasurable. And I want to be the person that can help them find a comfortable sexual experience to improve their quality of life. And any of those functions is going to be majorly life-changing.
When you see women like postpartum, like a pelvic health specialist sees both a woman who's had a vaginal delivery and a C-section, a cesarean delivery. Is there any like difference? Obviously, if someone's had a C-section, I assume there's like more work on like just the incision point, like the scar tissue and all that. Can you speak a little bit about why? I think maybe for some women, they may think, well, I didn't have a vaginal birth, so my pelvic floor wasn't affected. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Sure. So during pregnancy, your pelvic floor has to accommodate a growing baby. And that is all of a sudden no longer inside of you, like in a matter of minutes, it's gone. So regardless of whether you deliver vaginally or have a belly birth, your pelvic floor is going to respond from that change in weight, that change in force. And it can tighten as a response of trying to create stability, or it can be weak, but either way, that's not a functional pelvic floor. But then you're also dealing with a major abdominal surgery, and we need to make sure that those abdominal muscles are recovering appropriately. Because if your abdominal muscles are not doing their job, your pelvic floor has more work to do. And then you have this major incision in this scar. And if that scar tissue develops, you're going to see adhesions to the organs that are underneath. Your uterus and your bladder most often are going to possibly experience decreased mobility, because organs do need to have movement. And if there's scar tissue involvement, they may not have that full movement that they need to perform their functions without pain. So I do wish that the narrative around cesareans was that pelvic floor therapy should be part of the protocol, standard of practice, but it definitely isn't. And I see far fewer cesarean clients than vaginal births. I wish that were different, because I think there's no other surgery of that caliber where patients are getting sent home from the hospital and not being seen for another 6 weeks and not given clear instructions. I mean, I worked in the hospital when I first came out of therapy school, and the protocols that we sent home with knee surgeries, cardiac surgeries, shoulder surgeries were intense and lengthy, and week by week, what to do. Mothers do not receive those types of instructions. It's don't climb stairs and don't do heavy lifting. Here's your baby. See you. There's really no clear direction on how to recover. So I wish that more women were seeking out that sort of help and some guidance from pelvic health therapists in that fourth trimester, especially after that surgery. Yeah. After heart surgery, they were giving patients these heart-shaped pillows to hold to their chest when they go from seated to standing so that they're not straining and they're bracing that incision. I've never seen a woman come out of the hospital with something like that, but that's exactly what you should be doing, is holding, embracing.
Like uterus-shaped pillows that you put on your, to like hold on your low abdomen.
I would love that.
We can start a business.
Okay.
Etsy. We'll sell them on Etsy. Like pelvic floor therapy, like, isn't obviously limited to just women. You also work with pelvic floor therapy for children. So how would like a parent know when their son or daughter would need to see like a pelvic floor therapist? What does that look like?
Yeah, that can be tricky. Because so much of it has been normalized, right? Like bedwetting. Oh yeah, they it's okay. They're still bedwetting. That doctor told us that was normal. Well, is it normal, or is it starting to become embarrassing for the child? Are they not able to go to sleepovers because of it? Is it holding them back? And are they starting to feel embarrassed about it? Well, then it's time to maybe seek out some help. Are they someone who's fearful or anxious about, especially having bowel movements? That can be a huge impediment during potty training if there's some fearfulness, if there's some sensory issues surrounding toileting, like maybe they don't even feel the urge to poop or pee. So those are big reasons. I see a lot of kiddos that have like, withholding, like they're afraid to have a bowel movement, so they end up holding it in for too long. And then because they're holding it in, it turns into constipation. So then they really don't want to go because it's going to be painful. So those are the kind of kiddos that benefit from pelvic floor therapy. Let's try to ease them into being able to go to the bathroom without fear or pain. And often it's often there's a lot of sensory system involvement there.
And knowing that that is an option, I think that once again, even just the narrative and the education around that's an option, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to like maybe seeing a specialist outside of your provider who can really help this. And especially for the kiddo, because if it is life disrupting, there's help. So obviously each woman is different in her needs, and the approaches that you take differ with each client. Yeah, is there like one exercise or one practice that you think is important for all women to lean into?
I think that, well, it would be twofold. One would be to make sure that you are able to take ribcage expanding breaths. That's huge. Even if it means that you just lay down on your back on the floor for 5 to 10 minutes and just make sure that you can get nice rib cage expansion with an inhale and then exhale, contracting those belly muscles. That's huge. Having diaphragm movement is imperative for pelvic floor health. The other practice that everyone needs to be doing is exhaling as they lift and even as they rise from a chair. Exhaling as you exert yourself is protective of our pelvic floor muscles, because then we're not ever bearing down. So to prevent that strain in your day-to-day life, I mean, how many times do we get up? Let's just make a habit of doing it the right way so that we're not running into our 60s and 70s and needing to wear pads in our underwear, or sooner, hopefully not. But those are the big ones. That's what I make sure everyone is aware of before I discharge them, is that they need to be breathing and then they need to be exhaling with exertion.
I love that. Those are the two things that you take away from this episode. Yeah. Those two things. I love it. And it's simple. Like, I feel like people can, like, I can do that. And is there one last piece of advice that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, I think that if you are at a point where your quality of life is affected by your bowel or your bladder or even your sexual function, if you are avoiding certain things because of fear of what might happen with your bladder or your bowels, or you're avoiding having like comfortable sex and it's affecting your marriage or your relationships, that you really shouldn't have to live with that. It isn't normal to walk into a room and try to figure out where the bathroom is first thing. You shouldn't be living your life by where your bathrooms are. I just want more people to know that there is help, and not to put it off any longer, because your quality of life can be so improved by addressing these things. And you shouldn't have to live with it. It's not normal to have leakage. It's not normal to be controlled by the functions of your bladder and bowels, because these are voluntary muscles. They're supposed to do what you want them to do, not the other way around.
Such beautiful advice. I love it. Thank you for everything that you shared, all the wisdom that you shared with us today. Kate, where can our listeners find you?
Peaceablepelvis.com. Yeah, you can check out my website there and connect with me through the website, and or check out my Instagram page, which is peaceable_pelvis.
Awesome. All right. And I'll be sure to share that in the show notes as well, so you guys can all connect with Kate from there. Thank you so much for being a part of this show and co-creating this.
It was my pleasure.